You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome into the Monday edition of College Football Live. I am Matt Schick, clearly overdressed next to Greg McElroy and David Pollack. The year 2020 has been bizarre, to say the very least. So why should the preseason AP poll be any different, where everyone has a chance to be ranked, but not everybody has a chance to play? Here's a look at the top 10. Clemson comes in at number one for the second straight year. How'd you like to be a Buckeye fan today? Your wound hasn't even begun to heal, and the AP voters dump some salt into it, sitting there at number two. The 32nd consecutive season the Buckeyes have been ranked in the preseason AP poll, second longest streak since it debuted in 1950. We'll have the full preseason top 25 scrolling at the top of your screen. Greg, GMAC, you first saw that preseason top 25. You thought what?
Poor Ohio State fans and poor Ohio State players as well. I mean, Ryan Day described this team as maybe being a once-in-a-lifetime type of roster. And sure enough, there they are. The AP voters believe in them. They agree. And here they come in at number two in the preseason polls, and that's the only time we're going to see the Buckeyes in the fall version of these AP polls. So I felt bad for their players. I felt terrible for their fans, because what should be and what could be a really special season for the Buckeyes, they'll be sitting at home watching some of the teams around them vie for a national championship, Dave.
It's interesting. Every year this poll comes out, no football's been played. Every year we kind of look at it and we're like, yeah, it's kind of dumb to put a poll out right now. It doesn't really mean anything. And you know what? This further just reinforced that, because how stupid is it to have a poll when you have people that aren't even playing college football? They're not playing college football. Why on earth do we have a poll where we rank people that are not participating in football for the upcoming season? I don't get it. I do know that we have, Greg, we got 38 teams now in the ACC, SEC, Big 12. So to be ranked in the top 25 is not really going to be that big of a deal this year. So scrap the polls. Let's go ahead and get rid of them. If we have football and when we have football, I'm going to be excited as can be, but just reinforces polls are done before the season.
Again, we've got nine teams that you saw listed there that are in the preseason top 25 that are not going to play this season. And David kind of took us there. So, Greg, I'll get your thoughts on this. We've got those teams that aren't playing. What, 76 FBS teams are going to play? You've got to rank some teams, and after the opening week, only the teams that have played are going to be ranked. So what does being ranked mean this year, GMAC? Dave, you'll get your shot here again.
I think it might be the most meaningless AP poll in the history of college football. And kind of echoing David's point, this preseason version is even amplified by that. It's the most meaningless ever. And it's going to be a situation, guys, because it's conference versus conference games. There's going to be, and I'm just assuming this, there's going to be a team ranked in the top 25 that maybe halfway through the season is 500 or worse. I mean, yep. I could see a team like, say, Texas A&M. Let's just use them. With all due respect to the Aggies, I expect them to have a really good year. But they could be 2-3 and still be in the top 25, perhaps. It's one of those situations where the AP poll, and David, you said 38 teams. Come on, how can we forget the newest ACC member, Notre Dame? It's 39 teams in the Power 5, 76, you said, Matt, overall. And I think it's one of those situations where being ranked, yeah, it might be good for your press clippings. It might be good for your media guide that you send out next year. But it's absolutely meaningless this season when you take into account how few teams are playing.
It's meaningless, but I will say this. When you talk about the rankings and when they actually do matter, This will be the first year we'll see a two-loss team in the college football playoff. It's not going to be, you know, you're not going to be competing. You think about it, you're not going to be competing with two conferences that, you know, the Big Ten always has a team that's right there in the mix with one loss or undefeated. The Pac-12, you've seen the same type of thing. Now you remove those two from the equation. There's a good chance, I know everybody's going to love this, there's a good chance that two SEC teams are going to get in the college football playoff, and this will be the first time that I think we'll have one with two losses because we haven't had that opportunity before.
I did like getting to the meaningless aspect of it. I think Ivan Maisel wrote it today on ESPN.com saying, why not have the 95 Nebraska Cornhuskers in there? They're not playing either. So a point well taken for Mr. Maisel. But it is going to be interesting. And I think you're right. I think it's almost it's worse to not be ranked than it is great to be ranked. And so we're seeing the devaluing a little bit of it because of the number of teams of the rankings.
You really stink. You're not even the top 25, bro.
That's like that's right. You didn't even
awful.
Make it.
What's
you
got to
rank
you?
Somebody. You didn't even make it. Yeah. But so let's assume, like you guys said, the rankings devalued here at this point. What about the national championship being devalued? You know, with the rankings, you lose a bunch of teams. The national championship, you're going to lose at least one elite team in Ohio State. Pollock, does that devalue what happens there, winning a national title without the Buckeyes?
I think we're going to know it. In our heads, we're going to know that. But I don't think we're going to look back and be like, oh, man, that Ohio State team was the team that should have won the national title. Because let's be honest, like the last 5 years, there hasn't been a ton of success from the Pac-12 and the Big Ten. If you want to go by the numbers, they're not really contributing a ton to the conversation when it comes to the playoffs. But I think that if you have three out of five, to me, I think you can crown a champion. Listen, Greg's school, Alabama's, claimed worse national titles than this would be. So, I mean, if you really want to look at the past and start going through numbers of claimed national titles, there's a lot of asterisks in the past. This year wouldn't have an asterisk. Shoot, I think we'd just be jacked to have if we have a playoff and we get to that point where we had football that long. But three out of five, to me, still holds validity and still you're still national champion and I don't worry about anything else.
It's all a matter of perspective. It'll be celebrated and remembered and cherished by the one team that wins the national championship this fall. And it'll be discredited by every other team in the FBS. Oh, it wasn't a real season. Oh, it didn't really matter. Oh, we had to deal with so many hurdles. And really, it wasn't the same. So it doesn't really matter because no one's sitting there telling 1997 Michigan that their national championship doesn't matter because they had to split it. It doesn't matter. I mean, it's still a national championship. It's still going to be valued. It's still going to be cherished. And it's still going to be acknowledged, but it'll be acknowledged knowing that it was under unique circumstances. So, yeah, I do think some people will try to poke holes in it, David. But at the end of the day, you hold a trophy at the end and you're the best among the teams that did participate. That's something that should be celebrated.
That was a trophy there. You won't need an asterisk. You'll just have the date 2020, and everyone will know what that meant. Everyone knows
100%
what this season has meant. More coming up. I do want to mention this. On Monday, the Football Writers Association of America selected the first recipient of the Edward Ashoff Rising Star Award. That award this year goes to David Ubben of The Athletic. And the award, this is the first of its kind, named in honor of our late colleague, goes to a promising young journalist who shows inspiring work ethic and passion, just like our friend Edward Ashoff did. So congratulations to David Ubben, who was a colleague of Ed's when they both worked at ESPN. David, Edward would be proud, and Edward, as always, we miss you, buddy, here at ESPN. Coming up next here on College Football Live, the year 2020 been full of painful moments, but at least one positive can be taken from it, how student-athletes found their voice and how they intend to keep it. Next.
College Football Live is brought to you by DiGiorno. It's not delivery, it's DiGiorno.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Welcome back to College Football Live. This may, in fact, be a college sports season that is remembered for what was lost: games, opportunities for student athletes. But will no doubt also be remembered for what was found: the voice of the student athlete. Inspired by tragic events throughout our country, players are now speaking up about racial injustices within the college athletics structure. Here's Harry Lyles Jr. with more.
COVID-19 stopped the United States in a way that nobody thought possible. It forced Americans to reckon with what was happening before our very eyes, a continuation of racial injustice centuries in the making.
8 minutes and 46 seconds, the number burned into so many minds since the death of George Floyd.
We report again tonight on the fatal shooting of Ahmaud Arbery.
Rallies across this country, they are shouting another name as well, Breonna Taylor.
It started an uprising among college athletes all across the country who were no longer afraid to speak out.
Hubbard tweeting, "I will not stand for this. This is completely insensitive to everything going on in society, and it's unacceptable."
I'm going to do my best to educate him and do my best to make Oklahoma State a better program for all athletes.
Iowa strength coach Chris Doyle has been placed on administrative leave after allegations of racial insensitivity and disparities.
And while America is listening more than ever, the players are using their voices to create change.
I think it's beautiful to see all of us together. We look different, we are different, but we're together in a time that we can be divided.
Well, eventually, one day, we're going to have to look back and say, what did we do whenever certain things happened?
Black lives matter! Black lives matter!
It all culminated in the biggest movement for racial equality that we've seen in the history of college athletics, called We Are United, an effort aiming to change a system built against the athletes.
I think that this is a time where all of us are reconsidering our place and what we've given to these institutions versus what we received from them.
Across the country, athletes are developing a collective and representative voice, so their words will be heard and actions will be taken. They will never remain silent again.
We've had no representation this whole time. You know, we kind of just go with what they tell us. You know, it's about time for that to change.
And we welcome in the author of that piece, Harry Lyles Jr., on the screen here. That story is going to drop on ESPN.com on Tuesday. Desmond Howard, thrilled to be with him as well, part of this conversation. Harry, let's start with you. We have seen glimpses of athlete, student-athlete empowerment over the years, glimpses of students standing up and speaking up, but this appears to be different. What made this year and these moments that we've seen part of the time that these players had had enough?
Well, you know, a good example is, you know, whether for anybody watching the show right now, last night or this morning, we woke up to yet another name. And I think that, you know, this is a time where a lot of athletes are just kind of like fed up, right? Because you have the COVID-19 pandemic, which has kind of really stopped America, right? And you are forced to reckon with this thing that's happening right before our very eyes. And it's a very uncomfortable conversation for a lot of people, but it's a necessary one. And honestly, you know, student athlete or not, Black Americans are fed up. You know, for a lot of us, it was a fight or flight mode, watching all this stuff happen. And just that climate, it's gotten to a point where, you know, good enough is not good enough anymore. And they can't stay silent on little things that are happening, whether it's in their locker rooms or in their communities. And so they're taking a stance.
Desmond, do you anticipate this lasting in terms of player empowerment? Because you've got some players playing and some that are not, so maybe some of that leverage is gone this fall.
You know, Matt, that's a very good question. Harry, I'd like to give you a just compliment on that piece. Well done. Thank you for doing that. We need that.
Thanks, sir.
We need more pieces out there like this, so the momentum isn't slowed down. But, Matt, that's a very interesting point, because the movement started in the Pac-12 with those players, and we know that Larry Scott, the commissioner of the Pac-12, and they decided that they're not going to play this fall. So I believe that if they want to keep the momentum going, what they need to do first and foremost is to connect with other allies. You have a guy like Trevor Lawrence. Trevor Lawrence was a quarterback of Clemson who came out and had a strong voice earlier in the summer. If they can use him and his platform to keep the ball rolling. And then you have Justin Fields, Ohio State's quarterback. about a week and a half, 2 weeks ago, he had a petition signed about playing. Over 280,000 people signed. Use a guy like Justin Fields, who has a platform, a voice, even though he's not playing. Maybe he can have another platform, I mean, another petition signed, and use his leadership skills in that arena, because that's something, Matt and Harry, that'll last generations beyond whatever legacy that he leaves at Ohio State and Columbus.
Harry, it's going to be interesting to see.
Go ahead. The other thing with that too is,
right. It's a lot of this too is, and the reason that this particular piece that I wanted to write this also was that, you know, it got easy for a lot of the conversations to go to coronavirus, to go about, you know, Justin Fields and whether or not the players can play or not. But, you know, the main thing with this is, like, this is still a racial justice movement, and that's what it was for the Pac-12 players. And after their first meeting with Larry Scott, he made it very clear to them that he did not want to talk to them again. And that honestly is part of the, you know, a lot of people hear the systemic racism aspect of this now, right? Like, racism is more than just slurs. This is institutions that are built, right? And you have this in America where, you know, this country was built off the backs of black people. And so was this college football system.
Absolutely.
Because once you had the integration in the 60s and 70s, and you start getting into now, you know, the SEC, I believe, had $721 million of revenue last year. And a lot of these black athletes are looking at this and they're like, hey, I'm making a whole lot of money for people who do not look like me. And they want to change that. Now, that doesn't mean that they can't get these other things done. But at the same time, the system is not built for them. And it's, and, you know, they tell you it's about time for that to change.
Harry, why are those financials why are those financials so important, Harry? And what do you anticipate in terms of the We Are United stand, in terms of them being able to get out of this over the coming years?
You know, the big part of that, and a lot of people just, they kind of take that argument at like face value, and they're like, oh, well, they're getting an education, right? They're getting books, they're getting, you know, to use facilities and things like that. But that's a fixed cost, right? Like, college football is not the same game that it was many, many years ago. And so it is really a reflection of what is going on in America right now. So, and the other part with this too is, and this isn't even just with the Pac-12 players, the guys at Clemson who organized their protests, they are working in their community to try to advance those things, because this is not just a college football problem, right? Like, this is a problem in America. This is a problem in the United States. And it's an uncomfortable conversation to have, but it's one that has to be had. So when you start talking about the money that's being made and it's not going back into black communities, which is one of the great things that I thought the Pac-12 players had in their letter, was that, hey, like, invest, I believe it was 1-3% back into these communities. So not only are we making college football a more inclusive and an equal place, but we're also doing that in the greater world.
Yeah, I thought that they did a tremendous job of connecting the plight of black African Americans in this country to the systemic racism that's going on college campuses, and as far as the sports are concerned, college football, college basketball. They did a wonderful job. I also think that they need to reach out to some people who are OGs in this space, like a Dr. Harry Edwards. He was very instrumental in the 1968 Olympic protest in Mexico, or Dr. Richard Lapchick, human rights activist. Last time I checked, he was on staff at UCF. He's another brilliant mind who can help these guys guide this movement in the right direction.
We've seen a black student athlete essentially single-handedly help change the state flag of Mississippi. So you can't put it beyond anybody to continue to accomplish a lot in this movement. Dez, Harry, appreciate it. That story publishes Tuesday on ESPN.com. Thanks for the time. Moving along here on College Football Live. Up next, no fall season for North Dakota State, but they will play a game. What it could mean for the NFL prospects of their star quarterback. One last chance for Lance. Our fifth annual Fantasy Football Marathon rolling along. More than 24 straight hours of coverage on ESPN and the ESPN app. Someday you might be drafting Trey Lance for your fantasy team. The North Dakota State quarterback will have one last chance to wow the NFL scouts, as the Bison, who will not play a season, have scheduled one game this fall, October 3rd in Fargo, to host Central Arkansas. plans as a redshirt sophomore, projected as a top 15 pick. Mel Kiper Jr. has him as a third best quarterback prospect behind Trevor Lawrence and Justin Fields. David, what do you think this might do for his prospects? They're playing this one game.
First of all, that's just nuts. I mean, they're gearing up and they're going to get rolling, and you're going to go through fall camp, Greg, and we're going to talk about this season. And, dude, I need you guys to buy in. I want you to have the best season ever. Let's go win another championship, North Dakota State. Wait a minute. We're playing Arkansas? For what? For nothing? Oh, we're gonna make some money for the school. I mean, it's very interesting. Trey Lance is a stud. It'll be interesting to watch him on the field with athletes that are better, because he's a scramble guy more than he is throw the football down the field. I'd love to see an offense with RPOs and more fun and more wide open with him. But this is just crazy to me that North Dakota State's playing one game.
What I don't understand for Trey Lance, and this is kind of the optic that we're trying to take, I mean, this is not going to benefit all of a sudden his draft prospects. I mean, if anything, the guy last year goes 16-0, wins a national championship, has 28 touchdowns against zero interceptions, wows everybody as a redshirt freshman, and now NFL executives are starting to be really chirpy about his upside potential. Well, the only thing that could really disrupt the momentum that he's already created would be a really bad performance. And I don't think that's really in his best interest. So I think it's a difficult situation for him to go into. However, if he's going to be drafted in the top 15, top 10, potentially top 5, then he's probably going to be by far the best player on the field. And therefore, Dave, I guess going out there and leaving no doubt wouldn't be the worst idea for him.
Is this a good idea for Arkansas? I'm just
saying,
is this a good idea? Yeah, I mean, yeah.
Central Arkansas.
No, I know.
Arkansas.
It's not going to end well.
Well, they've got a handful of games. Central Arkansas is going to be playing as well. Again, that is slated for October 3rd in Fargo. All right, North Dakota State would likely have been the preseason number one FCS team. Instead, Clemson is, at least in the FBS side of things. Give me your overrated team for the AP top 25. That means so much, Greg.
I think LSU has a few more question marks than we're probably looking at. I mean, and this is coming from someone that likes LSU's talent, but when you're telling me you lose that many pieces, key pieces, five first-rounders, all these incredible players, Heisman Trophy winner, first overall pick, I just have a difficult time thinking that LSU can justify a number six ranking, Dave.
No Joe Brady. I can't wait to see that offense and see what it looks like. How about the Longhorns? Now, listen, where are they ranked? Because I don't know if they're 14th or 10th, because some teams don't actually exist anymore in the polls, by the way. But, you know, Texas has definitely struggled to play at a top 15 level the last couple years under Tom Herman. It'd be interesting to see if they can do it again. But technically they're ranked like 10th right now, because four teams don't really count. But that's okay. Whatever.
Nothing better than having you guys say the poll means nothing than asking you who's overrated. They're the AP poll. By the way, November 17th, first college football playoff rankings will be unveiled. We hope at least three
those rankings
are
actually
involved.
Matter.
Yeah, that's right.